Let me roll the intro and we start. Hi everybody, welcome back to Coder Dave. Today I'm very excited. I'm here with Sid, and we have for you a special live episode, I would say, because we will talk about many different things related to how you can learn DevOps better and actually how you can learn almost everything better, quicker, and more effectively. Sid, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Sid Pallas. I run a channel here on YouTube called DevOps Directive, and I split time between creating content for that channel and my technical blog and doing technical consulting work, mostly for startups in the DevOps and cloud infrastructure space. So helping them to build and scale their applications and teams.
And you were telling me that you've started with DevOps and DevOps related context like fairly recently. But you've reached already a level of maturity that it's quite impressive, to be honest.
Thank you.
And I guess the techniques and things we will discuss today helped you in your journey. Is it right?
For sure, yeah. So I started as a mechanical engineer and transitioned into software engineering a few years back and found that the DevOps portion of sort of the whole development lifecycle was what came most naturally to me and what I found the most exciting. And so I really decided to dig in on those topics for the past few years.
Cool. And in fact, I wanted to make this video because I've seen a lot of people struggling, or maybe not struggling, but getting in some areas or in some positions that they really can't really progress enough in their learning, in their journey, or anyway, there are something that they that blocks them or that slow them down. And DevOps is one of the things that has been kind of a buzzword for the past, I don't know, 5 years at least.
Yeah.
And with the current situation and the companies changing completely, it's something that is more and more present. And you see, people looking for DevOps positions everywhere, companies looking for hiring DevOps roles. And I think that's a great opportunity for everyone. But also, I think people that are already in DevOps roles can benefit from that. And we always learn something new. I learn something new every single day. And the reason why I ask you, Sid, to be here is that because I've seen one of your videos, and that was a really interesting video. And I remember the title was something like "Stop watching my videos" or "Don't watch my videos," which, by the way, do not do it. Keep watching our videos. But it was really interesting. And can you tell me why did you make that video?
Yeah, so that video focused on two primary concepts. The first concept is what is known as the zone of proximal development. And that is a theory or a concept developed by a Soviet psychologist in the early 1900s named Lev Vygotsky. And it essentially describes something that's fairly intuitive. He drew three concentric rings where the centermost circle is sort of the things that you can do unaided. So these are things that you already know how to do, you're fairly comfortable with them, and you can do them without any additional help. There's a ring outside of that one that is sort of the set of things that you can do, but you might require some guidance. And that is what is known as the zone of proximal development, because you're taking what you already know and sort of building upon it, and you're able to internalize those concepts pretty well. And then there's a third ring outside of the first two. And those are the things that really the learner, you cannot do even with guidance. They're just sort of too abstract and too far removed from the existing knowledge that you have. And so even if someone were to coach you through them, you don't really have the scaffolding, sort of the mental constructs to really internalize those and take them forward. And so by understanding where you fall along that set of rings, it can really help in your development process. And then the second concept within that video is sort of the fact that many YouTube videos focus on this they walk you through and they hold your hand down this Goldilocks path of perfection where nothing goes wrong. You just type in the code the first time, you hit enter, and all of a sudden your web application spins up automatically and everything works and there's no issues. And sort of that, while is useful and is an efficient way to communicate the process, unless you truly face some of the issues yourself and deal with debugging and stray from that happy path, you're not really going to learn the concepts as deeply. And so, yeah, that video kind of focused on those two core concepts and how you can start to think about your own learning journey in order to learn more effectively and internalize those concepts moving forward.
Yeah, and that perfectly makes sense, because as a content creator myself, and you are as well, you know, there are a lot of things that we do that people don't really see, right? Because you see our 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes video, but you know, the amount of time and tries and errors that go in, you know, in that video, it's way more than the 15 minutes that of the resulting you know, video itself. And because, as you said, we show the happy path, but what the viewers don't see is, you know, all the tries and all the problems we encounter along the way, which in some instances we do document, because maybe if you hit something that you think is valuable for your viewers or for your readers, because this of course applies also to blogs and to articles, to any kind of tutorial, right? If you think those things are valuable for your user, for your viewers, you do document them somehow in the video or in the blog. But if not, you don't, because if not, otherwise the video will be like 6 hours long, right? That makes perfect sense. And this is something very important, in my opinion, to point out, because there's something that people often don't see.
Right? Yeah, for sure. I think people watching these happy path tutorials can develop an unrealistic expectation of what they ought to be able to accomplish at a given level of seniority. All right. So if you see someone who always succeeds on the first try, that's not true for anybody. And so if that's all you ever see on the internet, it can be very easy to think, oh my gosh, well, it takes me 4 or 5 tries to get this thing to work. And that can be daunting and intimidating, when in reality, the person on the other side of the screen, as you mentioned, likely took that many or more attempts to get everything perfect. And so that's one thing that I've been trying to add a little bit to my content, is some more raw live streams where you do get to see a little bit more of the process. And it's definitely a different mode of learning, and you probably aren't going to get the same level of audience for that type of content. But having it available, I think, is a useful thing.
Yeah, that, and in fact, I think that's a great idea. So how do you think? What's your take on this? What's your advice? And also, you know, the method you mentioned before, the methodology. How can help us getting better in these?
Yeah, I think mostly there's an introspection to it, of understanding where you fall in those zones of development for a particular topic, right? There's not, oh, I'm in this zone, period. It's for a specific topic. And so understanding, if I'm trying to learn, I mean, if we just take mathematics as a general concept, you start with arithmetic and you learn how to add and subtract and multiply. And then you might move on to algebra and learn how to manipulate variables. And then you move on to calculus. And sort of knowing where you are on that spectrum, and then thinking about what is just one step away from where I currently am. And those are the things that I need to focus on next. Don't try to say, okay, I know how to do 2 + 2. I'm ready to do differential equations. Like, take an honest look at what you know and think about what is proximal to that.
And I think the mathematics example you just brought is perfect, because, you know, if you think at how people study mathematics, right, they don't go to the university, they attend the maybe semester, and then they just, you know, just listen and read, and then they say, I know everything about mathematics. No, they practice day in, day out, probably. So they do practice, they do, you know, break their heads on equations and this and that. And I guess this is also one of the things you talk about in your video, and, you know, you need to practice for yourself.
Yeah, and sort of the equivalent of that, right? In the mathematics example, you read to the end of the chapter, and oftentimes the author, excuse me, has the cheeky, this is left as an exercise for the reader, right? Is the phrase that we all hate to see when we're working through the problem set, because that means it's really hard and they didn't want to explain it in the book itself. But I think that same concept of taking whatever, if we now apply it to software or DevOps, taking whatever they built in that tutorial and modifying it to meet your needs. Either take the core application and maybe swap out which framework is used, swap out the domain that the application is addressing, or build some additional features on top of whatever the tutorial showed you, will make sure that you can take what you saw and map it onto actual reality, right? Not just taking each step one by one, but actually being able to take that and extend it sort of proves to yourself and helps to anchor those concepts into your mind.
Yeah, I agree. And if we move this to, you know, to DevOps, for example, and DevOps is an interesting area to apply this, because of course in the DevOps context you do have, you know, the different tools. So for example, you know, you can watch a tutorials on how to use GitHub Actions or Jenkins pipelines, but then until you actually try to do your own pipelines or CI and, you know, whatever, that's when you understand how these things work, how, you know, what could go wrong, all the different obstacles. And then it's one part of the, you know, of the scenario, because when we talk about DevOps, we also talk about culture, we talk about processes, and this is even harder to learn in general, but also harder to learn from a tutorial, because the tutorial can give you, you know, some examples, some scenarios, but then when you go and apply that to your company or to the company you're doing the consulting for, and so on and so forth, that's when all the problems come out and all the challenges and also all your experience, you know, needs to be put in practice. Do you agree with me?
I definitely agree. I mean, I think if you think about software tools being quite complex, humans are sort of an order of magnitude more complex, right? No matter how many scenarios you outline in the textbook or the guide for here's how we need to operate as a team to improve our software development lifecycle, you certainly will encounter scenarios that fall outside of those. And so being able to not just follow the specifics of the details of that one scenario and how to apply them, but actually how to map them onto similar scenarios and break them down into what the core concept is so that you can then map it to a new scenario is really critical.
And as a segue, we have a question or a comment from Arvin saying, "No, I'm a college student. How can I actually apply my knowledge?" I do have my answer, but I don't know if you want to answer to this first.
Yeah, I mean, I think in university, in college, you're going to have coursework where you build things. Those things are prescribed to you often. What I would suggest is figure out some application or domain that you are particularly interested in, maybe a hobby that you really like, and figure out some software application that is relevant to that area, and build it. And if you're interested in DevOps and infrastructure specifically, the application might be quite simple, but really building out all the systems around it, and ideally trying to convince some friends who also happen to be into that hobby to work with you, so that you can get a little bit more of that people practice as well. That's my best advice: is sort of build something that you're particularly interested in. And don't just stop at the simple application, but actually build out all the systems around it as well.
Yeah, and if I can take it a step further, still in the realm of, you know, you need to start doing just to prove yourself and to increase your skills. You know, sometimes I have questions like, well, I don't have time to complete the application just to, you know, to do a CI/CD for it or anything like that. Well, There's a thing that I don't know if you've ever heard of that is called GitHub, that has, you know, hundreds of thousands of projects and that people do. So one thing you could do is, you know, start contributing to these projects. But even if you don't want to contribute, or, you know, there's no contributions are not accepted, what you can always do is you can try to find a repo that, you know, has an application, or as you said, an application and a domain that you're interested in. You fork that repo, so you have all the freedom you want to work on that, and then start building, you know, CI/CD, start trying to understand how, if it's like a you know, microservice application, for example, how to containerize that, how the container communication works, you know, how to host that on something like Kubernetes or anything else. So there's endless possibilities. And of course, that will not be like working on an enterprise scenario for, you know, for the S&P 500 company, right? But at least you start somewhere. And if, you know, after your college, you go for an interview, you have something that you can show, and you have already, you know, put in practice the theoretical knowledge that you have. So that's what I would do.
Yeah, that brings up an interesting question that I would be interested to hear your take on, around whether you think people coming straight out of school should go directly into a DevOps type role, or if it makes more sense to go into a development role or an operations role and migrate down the road.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It depends of what DevOps we're talking about, right? I always do a big distinction by what they call DevOps engineer, which most of the time, unfortunately, translates to I do CI/CD. That's usually what the DevOps engineer is hired to do. And a broader DevOps role, like a DevOps architect, or someone that needs to implement processes and change company cultures and so on and so forth. So if we talk about the second one I mentioned, most likely would not be the perfect job for a new graduate, because they don't have yet the experience needed, especially if we talk about enterprise companies, to design processes and especially change the right company culture. It's not impossible, but I wouldn't necessarily, you know, recommend that as a first step just out of college. If we talk about more instead, you know, DevOps engineers, so more focused on tools, then it could definitely be an option. My career path didn't go straight into DevOps. I started with software development and then moved into DevOps. And I think even if you go into DevOps in a DevOps position directly, you need to have an understanding of software development, and you need to have an understanding of infrastructure. Those two things you need to have anyway. So if you can have it straight away, great. If not, you know, you better try and mature more in those areas before going to a DevOps role. This is my opinion. I don't know if you agree with me.
No, I definitely agree. I think people working in DevOps, there's so many topics that get bundled under that umbrella that it is very difficult to have context about all of them. And so coming from one side or the other helps you to ground that understanding in some real world experiences, and you will have run up against issues with scaling your application or deploying your application, that then once you encounter them at the intersection, once you are sort of in a DevOps role, you're able to think back to those foundational knowledge and really map it to the current context.
Yeah, and anyway, as I said before, we never stop learning, right? I'm doing DevOps, whatever that means, for about 14 years now, and still day in day out, I encounter things that I don't know. I encounter things that, you know, don't work as I thought they would. It's a continuous learning process, and going back to what we were saying before, this is where, you know, the kind of approaches that we were talking about really help. And again, practice is something that really, really work, or it really helps, right?
For sure.
Okay, let me take one more question. from Ayaz saying, does a DevOps engineer really need some software development skills? In my opinion, yes. You do need to have software development skills because what you do is related to software. And you need to be able, if you want to call yourself a proper DevOps engineer, you need to be able, be able to figure these things out. And often, I don't want to go too much out of topic, but this is why normally I don't like the definition of DevOps engineer, because it gives you an idea that, you know, developers give you whatever they give you, and then you need to figure out what to how to deploy it, how to do CI/CD, etc. That is not, to me, doing DevOps. DevOps is something that the whole team does together, from ideation to operations in production and everything that is between. So in my opinion, yes, you do need to have at least some software development skills.
Yeah, totally agree. I think there will come a point probably very soon after you start working in one of these roles where you're debugging something and you need to understand why the errors that are happening are happening. And the only way to do that is to have some understanding of how the application actually works.
Yeah. All right, so moving on. Do we want to go in some more specific examples? Do you have anything to that you want to talk about more in practice? Because we've been talking about, you know, how we can theoretically approach this, but do you have any example that you want to bring?
Yeah, I think we could really pick almost any domain within DevOps and really dig into it and think about sort of what is the progression of learning. What are those foundational concepts that you need to really have under your belt before you can progress to the next level? Let's say if we think about those zones of proximal development. I mean, I came into the software engineering world in kind of a roundabout way, where I was a mechanical engineer first, transitioned into software engineering, and jumped right into a full stack role where I was both working on the front end, but also working with a system of microservices deployed into Kubernetes. And so I would not recommend that path for others, because I clearly went from, like I had written software, but I didn't consider myself a software engineer, and I didn't know all the pieces that go into deploying a web application. And I jumped straight to that outer zone of what the heck even is this Kubernetes thing? And the challenge there is that there's just so many layers of abstraction between where your code is running and how you interact with these higher level systems. And we could talk through sort of what the different layers there are. At the bottom most layer, you have some system running Linux, some CPU and some data center, probably owned by Amazon or Google or who knows.
Or Microsoft.
Microsoft, sorry. And then we're going to virtualize some operating system. Usually, sometimes you run at bare metal, but we have some virtualized operating system. And then on top of that, we have these containers, and then those containers are being managed by the system called Kubernetes. And so, yeah, there's just five layers of abstraction between your code and the Kubernetes layer. And so I probably understood one of those five at the beginning. And so it was very difficult for me to understand when something went wrong. Where do I even look? Like, where do I poke in that stack to try to think about how to debug it? I think a better approach would have been to learn how a web application would be deployed just onto a VM. One instance, put it on a VM running in Azure, configure it with DNS, and there we've got my simple monolithic web application. There's only one layer between sort of, yes, there's a virtualization layer, but pretty simple between what I wrote and what is running. Then from there, you could build up and say, okay, my application is starting to scale. One instance isn't quite enough. What can I do to try to improve that? I could scale horizontally, maybe, if it's a stateless application. I can have two instances, just set up two VMs, load balancer in front. Great. Then maybe we scale it up even further and start to think about how do we automate some of the orchestration of those multiple VMs. So do we have an auto-scaling group of those instances? Do we start to move to an orchestrator like a HashiCorp Nomad or a Docker Swarm or a Kubernetes? And so, yeah, just sort of working your way slowly up that progression, I think would be super, super important.
So I have a design course. First of all, thank you for your super chat. And he says, I understand basically zero of those five layers. And I guess that was also the situation in which you were in when you started. And to be completely honest, that was also the situation I was in the first time I tried to use Kubernetes. And once again, that's why, you know, what Sid was saying, go gradually and also try to practice more, because that's the only way you'll be able to, you know, to get those things, right? So again, thanks for the super chat.
Yeah, design course, I did a collaboration with him where he wrote an application and then I helped him to deploy it onto a VPS in Hostinger. So that was a lot of fun.
And I think, and this brings to another point that I wanted to address is, if don't try to do everything by yourself. Of course, if you do everything by yourself, eventually you will get to the result, and you will get to the result knowing exactly what you've done. But if you have, you know, a friend that is doing this already, or if you can, you know, connect to a community of people that have some same interest in IT or DevOps or everything, why not working together, right? So try to create community, if you will, and work together. Yep. To get better in anything you're doing. This of course applies to DevOps, but applies to software engineering and applies to basically everything and anything that you want to learn. But I think it's especially important in software engineering and DevOps in general, because there are so many people doing it, and every one of us is on a different level, and the landscape of technologies, frameworks, and you name it, it's so vast that no one can know everything. So, you know, maybe I know GitHub, you know AWS, I don't know much of AWS. So if we can work together, it will, you know, will beneficial for every one of us.
For sure, yeah. And if we tie it back to the zone of proximal development, one thing I didn't mention about that is sort of, we talk about what you can do unaided and aided. The aid there could be an online tutorial, a video, but it also could be a person. It could be a person in this community that you're building. And that's actually usually ideal, because that person can also be aware and understand where you are in your current journey and adjust their explanations appropriately and sort of tailor make their assistance to help you along your path, versus a fixed resource online. It is what it is, and you just have to hope that it is at the right level, or maybe search for one that is. But having a human who can adapt their teaching and their assistance can really benefit you as a learner.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, just a small plug for the both of us. Both of us have a community that is running on Discord and other sites. So if you want to be part of those, check the link in the video description, in this video description for me, and go and check Sid channel. You have the link on screen or the name on screen. He has all the details in his video description. So yeah, I thought important to mention that.
Yeah, I mean, both are great places to ask questions, get feedback, and learn these types of things.
And also, don't be afraid to ask. And don't be afraid to ask for feedback. That is the best way, or one of the best ways to learn and to get better and to improve your skills.
Yeah, I think one thing that I struggled with early on is knowing the appropriate point to ask, right? If you're on a team of people, you can't just immediately, every time you encounter something you don't know how to do, say, help, help, senior engineer, please help. That's not useful for anyone. Instead, if you can spend half an hour, depending on the scope of the project or the problem, really digging in and trying to figure it out on your own, some percentage of the time you will succeed, and that's great. You were able to master it and accomplish the task. Some percentage of the time, you will make a little bit of progress, but not necessarily have it all the way there. And then some percentage of the time, you'll spend an hour, you'll take some notes on what's going on, but really you weren't ready yet, and you'll get stuck. And so being able to take the output of those initial self attempts and take that to the more senior engineer, or maybe it's just someone who has more context on the problem, and say, here's what I tried, here's what I think worked, here's what didn't quite work, can you help me build from there? That provides them, one, it's more efficient, a more efficient use of their time, because they can then, they have a good starting point and can build from it. And two, they will have a better understanding of where you are and what gaps you have in your knowledge that they can help to fill. So yeah, I think that was one of the key aspects for me as I was coming into software engineering, is figuring out what the right point was and then becoming comfortable with reaching out for help once I reached that point.
Yeah, and also one thing you mentioned briefly is, you know, how much time you can or you want to spend in, you know, troubleshooting an issue or you know, in that task. Because sometimes, especially if you're not too familiar with those things, you may end up going down a rabbit hole. And that is also not helpful. It's not helpful for you, because most likely at that point, you're not going to learn anything or almost anything by yourself. You will need anyway to have help. But also, if you're doing that in a context, in a professional context, that is also a problem, because, you know, you're maybe slowing down the rest of the team or causing any issue on those kind of you know, similar scenarios. So again, don't be afraid to ask. Don't, as you said correctly, don't ask every single thing and every 3 seconds, because then it's counterproductive. But yeah, don't be afraid to ask, and don't be afraid to seek for help.
Definitely.
There is another question from Arvin saying that, in such condition, what is your advice for documentation of your product, as you all have different knowledge? I'm not 100% sure of what the question means, but what I can say is that, first of all, the documentation is fairly important. And I know that especially when it comes to software engineers, we hate writing documentations, but it is something that is important. And I would, my advice would be, don't write documentation like, you know, if you're targeting someone that is a complete beginner, because you may end up having too many details and too many non-relevant information. But also, don't, even if you work with a team that are highly specialized, don't assume that everyone will know the basics and will know, you know, everything else before that point. So try to find a balance between being too basic, but also being too high level or low level, if you will. So that would be my recommendation. I don't know if you have something else, Sid.
No, I think that's a good recommendation. You want the documentation to be complete enough. I think that like an intermediate level person could use that as the sole resource, ideally, and figure things out. If you want to showcase sort of the more advanced features, that can be a good place. Maybe if you have examples within the code repo that can highlight some of the more gnarly or challenging portions of the code, that can be a good way to, without having to go line by line and type everything out in prose, but actually having the code there to reference can be another good way to go, where you can play a little bit with the difficulty level within different examples.
Yeah, and I also assume that not everyone reading the documentation will have the exact same context you have. So try to lay down a general picture of what, you know, where this is coming from, and, you know, the general information that you would need to understand what you're writing. And that is also for yourself, because sometimes I need to go back to documentation I've written like 2 years ago, and I may have not made a very good job, because sometimes I don't really understand what I've written. So if I have to give this advice to myself, I would have to give it like 2 or 3 years ago. Unfortunately, I had no one telling me this.
Yeah. Also, keeping documentation up to date is a challenge, right? So if you document code with, ideally, the documentation lives as close to the code as possible, or even as a part of the code, where if something is self-documenting, your code is the only truly up-to-date thing. Documentation ideally is up-to-date, but oftentimes tends to drift. And so the closer you can get those two together, the better.
And when we talk about code, just a clarification, at least for me, I don't mean only, you know, application code, but I mean, for example, infrastructure as code, configuration as code, all of that needs documentation. And all of that is equally important when it comes to a overall application or project. So that's something that is important to look into and often is actually overlooked. Last thing I want to say about this point, and we can move on, is lately there have been a lot of systems to generate documentation automatically as part of your CI/CD or as part of your release process. So you can, for example, look into one of those, and you know they're not perfect, and of course you still need to write some documentation manually. But at least they are helping, and they can be helping in the process.
Yeah, for sure. I use something called Sphinx with Python code quite a bit, and you can also add stuff to your linting process to, for example, force or enforce that you have doc strings for each function and typing and all that sort of stuff.
All right, so. I don't know if there's any other question in the audience. I don't know if there's any other points, Sid, that you wanna touch on.
I think we covered the points pretty well. I mean, thinking about introspectively examining your current understanding of whatever topic and building from there, as well as not being afraid to stray from that happy path and really dig in on some extension or some modification of the application. To continue to build your knowledge across all these different topics is really kind of two of the main tips that I would give to people on their DevOps journey.
Yeah, and again, as I said before, practice. That's the most important thing. I've seen so many times working with different companies, people saying, "Yeah, I've watched this. Now I know," or "I've read this article. Now I know." Well, you may know today and just the context of that article or that video, but let's talk about that in a week and let's see if you still know, right? Or let's go just slightly out of that specific example and let's see if you if you really know. So practice is really important.
For sure, for sure.
Ben is still talking about documentation and says that he likes to include workflows like Visio, for example, to understand better what's going on. And that's a valuable tool. I've seen it often overused or misused because writing Visio or writing diagrams or designing diagrams is for some people more fun than writing documentation. So they try to focus on that rather than writing documentation. And then you end up having a diagram that in the mind of the creator is perfectly clear, but then may not be clear for everyone. So diagrams and workflows are really powerful, but they need to be, you know, together with documentation. If not, you may end up having a different effect that you wanted to. All right. So I think we're done for today. I don't have anything else in mind. I don't know if, Sid, you want to do a closure, your final thoughts?
No, I think this was a great discussion. Thank you for having me on. It's been fun to chat about these topics and get to hear from some of your subscribers as well. So yeah, it's cool to be able to connect virtually from opposite sides of the world and jam out on some DevOps topics.
Yeah, and hopefully sooner or later we will be able to do something like this, but in person. I would love that.
Yeah.
All right. So thanks, Sid. Thanks, everyone, for watching through this video. I really enjoyed the conversation. I hope you got something valuable out of this. We touched on so many things, but I think I hope that there was something valuable for everyone. As I said before, if you enjoy our content, please subscribe to our channels. You are on my channel already, so you know it. Go and check Sid's channel, DevOps Directive, and he has very good content there as well. And I think we complement each other because we seldom cover the same topics. So if you subscribe to both of us, you will not be disappointed nor bored, I hope. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much for watching. I see you in the next video here at Coder Day. Bye.